I'd like for you to open your Bible to 2 Kings chapter 8, verse number 16 is where we'll be in just a moment. We have been looking at some of the miraculous ministry of Elisha, the new prophet leader in northern Israel. Now, a lot of the things that Elisha is doing, as recorded in 2 Kings, we can't clearly pin down to any particular dates. And so that's tough on those of us that really like our chronology really tight. But we do have some changes among the kings that we can pin down to some dates right around that same time period. And so we're basically talking in the 9th century BC, the 800s, I think probably the 860s down into the 850s BC. So one of the king's dates that we can pin down in a weird little way is recorded right here in 2 Kings 8:16, where it says this: in the fifth year of Joram, or his fuller name is Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel. So we know about him. We know when he's reigning. But then it says this: when Jehoshaphat was king of Judah. So by this we know that Jehoshaphat is still alive. He is still counted as king. But the next line says that Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. And so when we take everything into consideration, this seems to be a reference to 859 BC. For whatever reason, Jehoshaphat makes sure that everyone understands that his eldest son, Jehoram, will be the next king, because now he's going to start serving as the crown prince or the co-king or something along that line. So this is how his reign, Jehoram's reign, gets started from this particular date. And then it gets weird for us because we have two Jehorams. We have King Jehoram in Israel to the north, the son of Ahab, and then we have King Jehoram in Judah to the south, the son-in-law of King Ahab, the brother-in-law of the late king, or the current king, Jehoram of the north. Very, very strange. But let's keep reading. Verse 17 says, he was 32 years old when he became king. So Jehoram of Judah is 32. He reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And then I'm going to read the next part, although we'll read it again over in Chronicles in a bit. He walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, as the house of Ahab had done, for the daughter of Ahab was his wife. So he is married to the princess of northern Israel, the daughter of the late king Ahab, the sister of the current king Jehoram. Her name is Athaliah. He did what was evil in the sight of he who is. So the new king, the crown prince, the up-and-coming solo leader of southern Judah is not a good guy. And then we read, just a few years later, this is 856 BC, I believe, about how Jehoram dies. 2 Chronicles 21:1. Jehoshaphat, his father. Jehoshaphat slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. and Jehoram, his son, reigned in his place. So apparently Jehoshaphat knew it was coming. Maybe he sensed that his life was drawing to a close, and he wanted to kind of wrap up everything clearly and concisely before he passed. Verse 2, Jehoram had brothers, the sons of Jehoshaphat. And then we start naming them off. Azariah, Yehiel, Zechariah, Azariah, another Azariah, Mikael, and Shephatiah. All these were the sons of Jehoshaphat, king of Israel. Now, while Jehoshaphat was still alive, probably in that last few years of his life, we read this, verse 3. Their father gave them great gifts of silver, gold, and valuable possessions, together with fortified cities in Judah. But he gave the kingdom to Jehoram because he was the firstborn. So Jehoshaphat tried to arrange things as best he could, where all of his sons had some sort of leadership positions in his kingdom. But Jehoram was going to be the new king. So he tried to take care of it, but it all fell apart as soon as he was dead. More than likely, they would have had 30 days of mourning over the death of Jehoshaphat. And so the next thing after that we would read about is in verse number 4. When Jehoram had ascended the throne of his father and was established. So after all of the ceremony had been gone through, he then killed all his brothers with the sword and also some of the princes of Israel. Now, the princes of Israel here would probably be leaders in other families, the sons in leadership families within Israel, amongst the elders of Israel, people of power and prominence. So he has the position of king, but Jehoram doesn't want to take a chance of anyone challenging him when he goes in the direction of the northern Israeli kingdom. Jehoram was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, as the house of Ahab had done, for the daughter of Ahab was his wife, and he did what was evil in the sight of he who is. So there has been this really strange coup in the southern kingdom of Judah by their legitimate king. He takes over the center of the lifestyle and culture of his kingdom and begins to deviate it toward that of the northern kingdom. The worship of Baal, the worship of Asherah, because his wife comes from that background. And apparently that is where his heart leans as well. God chooses not to intervene immediately into the situation. This is something a lot of us have a hard time understanding. Why does God allow evil to prevail? And my only answer, my persistent answer, is it's got something to do with the free will choices. God allows the free will choices of humanity to move forward unless it would be detrimental in a disastrous fashion to his overarching plan, his overall plan. So he tends to let things play out unless doing so would stop the greater plan that he has in mind for salvation. And apparently in this case, letting Jehoram have his 8 years of reign, including the killing off of his brothers, the changing of the religion toward that of northern Israel, apparently it would not have been permanently detrimental. So God allows it. Verse number 7. Yet he who is was not willing to destroy the house of David because of the covenant that he had made with David, and since he had promised to give a lamp to him and to his sons forever. So God permits this evil man with his evil wife to do evil things for a double handful of years. Now, what we'll discover in a little bit, so this is a little heads up, is that the year before that 8 year disastrous period comes to a close, the evil king Jehoram and the evil queen Athaliah, they are going to end up with children that come into existence, or grandchildren that come into existence, that will be very important later in the story. Now, what else is going on during this time? Still in 2 Chronicles, chapter 21, verse 8. In his days, that is, in evil Jehoram's days, Edom revolted from the rule of Judah and set up a king of their own. So the Edomites were part of the remnant of the Davidic kingdom in the south. Edom, remember, is on the southeast corner of the Dead Sea. And so it's part of the Judean kingdom. But the moment that this guy shows himself to be very wicked and evil, the Edomites say, nope, we're not having anything to do with that. We're out of here. So Jehoram, being the tyrant that he is, doesn't feel that he can allow that to go. So Jehoram passed over with his commanders and all his chariots, and he rose by night and struck the Edomites who had surrounded him and his chariot commanders. So he ends up going against them. They get into a big fight. It looks almost like they're going to get the guy, and then he gets away. But it then leaves Edom independent of the Judean kingdom. So Edom revolted from the rule of Judah to this day. So whoever the prophet writer is at this point says, and that's why Edom is an independent kingdom at this point. Then we get a little extra note. At that time, Libna also revolted from his rule. Now, Libna is a Judean city to the southwest of Jerusalem. And this city was apparently also unhappy with this new king and his rebellious attitude. And so they say, well, we're going to be independent as well. And it says right here, it was because he had forsaken, he who is, the God of his fathers. So not everybody in the kingdom of Judah is willing to go along with this man's rebellion against the true and living God. Here's some more things that he did. Verse 11. Moreover, he made high places in the country, the hill country of Judah, and led the inhabitants of Jerusalem into whoredom and made Judah go astray. So he arranges for there to be worship sites to probably Baal and Asherah and other gods and goddesses that were part of that Canaanite divine counsel, and that goes directly against everything that the southern kingdom of Judah has been standing for all these years. I mean, they've had little hiccups along the way where they were doing some of that nonsense, But this time it is being officially held up by the king and queen themselves. And this is where verse 12 tells us that he gets a warning. A letter came to him from Elijah the prophet. Now, we already know in our chronology that Elijah by this time has been taken up to glory, been taken up into the heavens by the fiery chariot. He's disappeared. I think he's pulled forward in time to Revelation chapter 11 stuff. I think he's one of the two witnesses. But he's gone from this timescape. So how are we getting a letter from him? Well, there's two possibilities, and I'll tell you which one I think is the more likely one in a moment. One is that Elijah, as a prophet of God, wrote this letter before he left and left instructions for it to be delivered at this time. That's one possibility. The other possibility, which I think is more likely, is that this is an example of where somebody did the same thing I do all the time, and that is make a verbal mistake between the names Elijah and Elisha, and that it's a hiccup that kind of got into the text at this point, that it's actually Elisha, the current prophet of northern Israel, that is writing this letter. So that's my opinion, is that this letter is from Elisha. Regardless, it's from God. And this is what it says. Thus says he who is the God of David your father, because you have not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat your father, or in the ways of Asa king of Judah. So you're not living like the last two kings did, but instead have walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. So specifically Ahab and Jehoram, which would be the worship of Baal and Asherah and all those other gods and goddesses. And that you have enticed Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem into whoredom, which is talking about spiritual adultery, worshiping other gods and goddesses. And also you've killed your brothers of your father's house who were better than you. So the murder of your siblings that were much more moral than yourself. Behold, he who is will bring a great plague on your people, your children, your wives, all your possessions. So you're going to end up with a devastating judgment by God on your situation. This is prophecy. And verse 15, very specific things for him. And you yourself will have a severe disease with sickness with a disease of your bowels, until your bowels come out because of the disease day by day. Now that's, oh boy, that does not seem like a good thing. Some sort of nasty disease of the gut that will eventually have him lose his life over a total disruption of his intestinal system. And then we have the fulfillment of it. And remember, he's only going to be on the throne 8 years. And so this all happens during those 8 years. Verse 16. So he who is stirred up against Jehoram, the anger of the Philistines. So he's already lost the Edomites on the southeast part of his kingdom. Now he loses the Philistines, any type of connection he had with them over on the west side of his territory, and of the Arabians who were near the Ethiopians. That's probably a reference to the Sinai Peninsula area, because it juts down into the, you know, the area of the Red Sea And Ethiopia is just across the Red Sea from the southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula. And so all of those deep Sinai Arab Bedouins that used to be underneath the kingdom of Solomon and then under the kingdom of the Judeans. So those guys are causing trouble. Verse 17, they came up against Judah, they invaded it, and they carried away all the possessions they found that belonged to the king's house. That's exactly what the prophecy said would happen. And then also his sons and his wives. So he gets people kidnapped, taken away as political hostages probably, for ransoms or for some sort of control deal. So that no son was left to him except Jehoahaz, his youngest son. Now, Jehoahaz is also known by the name we'll see in a little bit, and that is Ahaziah. And so he only has this one kid left, and he'll be on the throne next. Verse 18, after all this, he who has struck him in his bowels with an incurable disease, and in the course of time, at the end of 2 years, so all the things we read about to begin with, they happened in the first 6 years of his 8-year reign. And then the last 2 years, he's suffering from this physical debilitating illness until finally we are told that his bowels came out because of the disease. He died in great agony. His people made no fire in his honor like the fires made for his fathers. Probably not cremation in mind here, but rather some sort of display, fiery display of public grief or honor. They don't do it for him because he's such a rotten character. The summary is that he was 32 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 8 years in Jerusalem, so lived to around age 40. Not very old at all. And he departed with no one's regret. Wow. That is definitely not something you want to see in an obituary, is that nobody was sorry to see him go. And then they buried him in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the kings. So they went ahead and put his body away somewhere inside the boundaries of the city of Jerusalem, but they did not put it in the royal tombs there on the south east side of the ancient city of Jerusalem. At this point, we need to go over to 2 Kings chapter number 6 and pick up some stories that happened with the prophet Elisha before we finally arrive with a some stories that we can relate to the kingdoms together. Okay, and so 2 Kings chapter number 6 verse 24. We can't pin these things down. In fact, it's very hard to do so. But we know that they must have happened sometime in this range of kingdom period. So verse 24 says, 2 Kings 6, afterward, Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, mustered his entire army, and he went up and besieged Samaria. So northern Israel is being attacked by the kingdom that is headquartered out of Damascus. We've seen this happen before. They're neighbors. In this case, there was a great famine in Samaria as they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver. Now, that's a lot of money for a little bitty head with not much meat on it. And then a fourth part of a cob of dove's dung for 5 shekels of silver. Now, that's a lot of money for a tiny bit of bird poop that can be used as a substitute burning source for cooking, or perhaps even for light, I suppose. Because there are no supplies. It's just really, really bad. Now, as the king of Israel was passing by on a wall, so he's checking out how everybody's doing during this siege. A woman cried out to him saying, "Help, my lord, O king." And he said, "If he who is will not help you, how shall I help you? From the threshing floor? From the wine press?" So he is angry about the situation, and he replies in such a way to kind of show that anger through sarcasm. But then the king asked her, "What's your trouble?" And she answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and then we'll eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and we ate him. And on the next day, I said to her, 'Give your son that we may eat him,' but she's hidden her son." So the king is used to getting called as kind of the last judicial resort. But in this case, what he hears is a complaint that we made a deal to engage in cannibalism of her child already, and now when it's coming time for her to let us eat her child, or my child first, and then it's time for her child to be eaten, she won't keep the deal. And so this is where the king gets very angry. When the king heard the words of the woman, he tore his clothes. Now he was passing by on the wall, and the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth beneath on his body. So he's very upset. He's apparently been praying and fasting. Not much choice in the fasting, probably. But then listen to what he says, which sets up the story for next episode. He said, "May God do so to me and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on his shoulders today." Mark your place. We'll get back here next time.